devotees. All glories to the lotus feet of Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 29, talks between Narada and King Prachina Bharati. This morning, text number 7. Brihat,
Brihat
Bolam,
Mano,
Vidya,
Upayendriya,
Nayakam.
Nayakam
Panchala,
Pancha,
Vishaya,
Yanmadye,
Navakam,
Puram,
Brihadbalam Mano Vidya, Ubhayendriya Nayakam. Chala pancha vishaya yanmadye navakham puram brihat balam mano vidya ubayendriya nayakam panchala pancha vishaya Vakampuram Brihat Balam Mano Vidya Ubhayendriya Nayakam Panchala Pancha Vishaya Yanmadyena Vakampuram Balam Mano Vidya
Ubhayendriya Nayakam
Panchala Pancha Vishaya
Yanmadyena
Vakampuram
Brihadbalam
Mano Vidya
Ubhayendriya
Nayakam
Manaha,
the mind.
Manaha.
vidyat, one should know. Ubhaya
indriya,
of both groups of senses.
Nayakam,
the leader.
Panchala,
the kingdom named Panchala.
Pancha,
five.
Vishaya,
sense objects.
Yat,
of which.
Madhye,
in the middle.
Navakam,
having nine apertures.
Aperture
means an opening.
Puram,
the city.
Translation.
The 11th attendant, who is the commander of the others, is known as the mind. He is the leader of the senses, both in the acquisition of knowledge and in the performance of work. The Panchala kingdom is that atmosphere in which the five sense objects are enjoyed. Within that Panchala kingdom is the city of the body, which has nine gates. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The mind is the center of all activities and is described here as Brihat Bala, very powerful. To get out of the clutches of Maya, material existence, one has to control his mind. According to training, the mind is the friend and the enemy of the living entity. If one gets a good manager, his estate, you know, his property, his estate is nicely managed. But if the manager is a thief, his estate is spoiled. Similarly, in his material conditional existence, the living entity gives power of attorney to his mind. As such, he is liable to be misdirected by his mind into enjoying sense objects. Srila Ambarish Maharaj therefore first engaged his mind upon the lotus feet of the Lord. Savai mana Krishna padaravindayoh. When the mind is engaged in meditation on the lotus feet of the Lord, the senses are controlled. This system of control is called Yama. And this means subduing the senses. One who can subdue the senses is called a Goswami. But one who cannot control the mind is called a Godasa. The mind directs the activities of the senses, which are expressed through different outlets as described in the next verse. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Parastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namani Namaste Sarasate Reve Gauravari Pacharane Nivishesha Sunyavari Pachachade Sacharane Oma Gyanam Timaranda Sir Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksuru Militum Jainam Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vanchakalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So in the allegorical story, Paranjana, every man, the embodied soul, finds a nice place, this city of nine gates, situated in the Panchala kingdom, and in a nice garden in that city, he meets up with a beautiful woman, Pramada. She represents material intelligence. And so she has these, when he meets her, she's not alone. She has these 10 men, attendants, people who are going along with her, and these represent the 10 senses, mentioned here as the Ubhaya Indriya, the both sets of, both groups of senses, the five who are knowledge acquiring, Gyanindriya, and the five which are acting instruments. And then there's one who is Brihadbala, very strong, and who is the leader of the 11th attendant. So who is that 11th? He is, that represents the mind. The kingdom is called Panchala. Panchala, pancha, the word five, refers to the objects of the knowledge acquiring senses, forms and sounds and tastes and touch and smells. So that's the kingdom, and the city is the one with these nine openings, which will then be described, the different openings of the body through which the senses work. So here Prabhupada says that the mind is the center of all activities. I think we talked a little bit about this yesterday also. The mind is the common sense, and is so therefore very powerful. And Prabhupada then says, to get out of the clutches of Maya, clutches means in the grasp of Maya, material existence, one has to control his mind. And then Prabhupada is referring to what's said in the Bhagavad Gita in the sixth chapter. We have the general principles of yoga. When the yoga system is described, Prabhupada is referring to this verse in chapter 6, text 5. Krishna says to Arjuna, one must deliver himself, free himself, with the help of the mind, and not degrade himself. The mind is the friend of the conditioned soul, and the enemy as well. For him who has conquered the mind is the best of friends, but for one who has failed to do so, his mind will remain the greatest enemy. The Prabhupada is referring to these verses here. Prabhupada remarks that in the yoga practice, the mind is the central part. Really, yoga is about controlling the mind. It's not really about the body, although it begins with bodily exercises. The real point of the yoga system is to deal with the mind. Prabhupada says here, the purpose of the yoga system is to control the mind and to draw it away from attachment to sense objects. It is stressed herein that the mind must be so trained that it can deliver the conditioned soul from the mire of nescience. Mire means mud. The kind of mud you see in a farmyard with stool in it, and nasty mud, mire. The mire of nescience, of ignorance. In material existence, one is subjected to the influence of the mind in the senses. In fact, the pure soul is entangled in the material world because the mind is involved with the false ego, which desires to lord it over material nature. Therefore, the mind should be trained so that we'll not be attracted by the glitter of material nature. And in this way, the conditioned souls may be saved. One should not degrade oneself by attraction to sense objects. The more one is attracted to sense objects, the more one becomes entangled in material existence. The best way to disentangle oneself is to always engage the mind in Krishna consciousness. And then, Prabhupada quotes from the Amritu Bindu Upanishad, for man, mind is the cause of bondage, and mind is the cause of liberation. Mind, absorbed in sense objects, is the cause of bondage, and mind, detached from the sense objects, is the cause of liberation. So then he says, Krishna says, when the mind is conquered, it is the best of friends, but for one who has failed to do so, his mind will remain the greatest enemy. The whole thing is to control the mind and thereby control the senses. That's what the idea of yoga practice is about. Yeah, there's no way around this, because otherwise the mind, the warehouse of all ideas of sense gratification, as soon as the sense objects are there, the senses go and the mind goes right along, and the mind is the source of all habit, and we simply cannot control it. Sometimes we want to do. People are everywhere, being dragged around by their mind and senses. Most people who commit crimes, the majority, they don't want to do it, but somehow or other they're driven. Somehow or other they lose control. Suddenly they become overpowered by lust, or overpowered by anger, overpowered by greed, and they say, I know I'm going to get in trouble, I know I shouldn't do this, but they do it anyway, because they simply cannot control. So this is a big trouble, and yet there's hardly any training anymore in this kind of control. People sort of have the minimum amount of training, because now everyone thinks that sense gratification is the path to happiness, when it is just the opposite. So especially if one takes up yoga, that means there's an interest in spiritual life. So that means one has to take very seriously this business of dealing with the mind, which is brihat bala, is very strong. It's very powerful. But that's to fix the mind on the lotus feet of Krishna. Now, Krishna describes this to Arjuna in this same chapter. He says, as a lamp in the windless place does not waver. You have lamp means a flame, of course, like a candle flame, or like a ghee lamp. When there's no wind, that lamp doesn't move. It looks completely still. As soon as there's just even the slightest breeze, you see it go back and forth. Just even a little breath of air, the candle will move, the light will move. So, as a lamp in a windless place does not waver, so the transcendentalist, whose mind is controlled, remains always steady in his meditation on the transcendent self. So our attention to Krishna should be like that. It should be just fixed. It should not go anywhere else. Krishna says one should engage oneself in the practice of yoga with determination. This is required also. There has to be some nischaya, vidha nischaya, a fixed determination. This is also called vyavasaatmika buddhi. With determination and faith. Both of those things are there. And not be deviated from the path. One should abandon without exception all material desires born of mental speculation, sankalpa, and thus control all the senses on all sides by the mind. Gradually, step by step, one should become situated in trance by means of intelligence, buddhi. You see, because the ability to control the mind and direct the mind, this is buddhi. This is intelligence. The mind goes here and there, but what actually fixes our attention and thus what our mind is thinking, feeling and willing about, that is buddhi. So one becomes situated in trance by means of intelligence sustained by full conviction, and thus the mind should be fixed on the self alone and should think of nothing else. Fixed on the self alone. Here self means on Krishna, the Supreme Self, fixed, and should think of nothing else. Then Krishna says, from wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, he uses this word chanchalam and astiram. Chanchalam, it goes here and there, it's unsteady. He mentions this flickering and unsteady nature of the mind. So you're fixing it on the self, it may go somewhere else. What happens? One must certainly withdraw it, take it away from where it has gone and bring it back under the control of the self. So Krishna is saying like this, and you can imagine when he describes this, Arjuna is waiting to say something. And he does. He says, O Madhusudana, the system of yoga which you have summarized appears impractical. Impractical means it cannot be done, it cannot be practiced. And unendurable. No one can stand it. For the mind is, and he uses the same words that Krishna used. Chanchalam astiram. It is restless and is unsteady. It's true, you said it. The mind is restless and unsteady. And then he adds a few words, restless, agitated, and then he says balavat, has strength, power, very strong, vidha, he just won't submit to your will, and it is to try to control it is like trying to control wind. Like when there's a big windstorm, you know, you can't, it just blows everything, like the hurricane in the United States recently. Who can control it? Not even the Bush administration. So, when Krishna hears this objection, first of all, he acknowledges it. Yeah, it's true. It is difficult to control, to curb. Curb means, you know, to bring under control. To curb the restless mind. That's true. He says, but it can be done. Abhyasena tukanteo vairagyena chagriyate. It can be done by these two things, abhyasa and vairagya. The word vairagya means detachment. Therefore, we have some rules for detaching the senses from sensa. We four regulative principles. If we are engaged in sense gratification, that increases the turbulence of the mind. If we want to control the mind, the thing we cannot be doing is increasing the wind, increasing the power of the wind. So when we engage in sense gratification, the mind becomes more difficult to control. So as much as possible, we try to decrease sense gratification to the level of that we are satisfying the senses only as much as we need to maintain a healthy life. Anything beyond that, we don't do. Then the mind is a little easier to control. Remember, we wanted to make it steady like this candle flame in a windless place. So we try to stop the places where the wind comes in. You shut the doors and the windows. That's not, you keep letting the wind come in, you're going to have a really hard time. But still, even though we are not engaged in sense gratification, there, unfortunately, we have an impure memory. And the mind has already got, not even from this life, but from so many lifetimes, the memory is polluted. Even any idea comes in the mind. Any remembrance, any thoughts of sense gratification. I may stop my activities, but the desires are still there. And so I try to give everything, and then I remember my old girlfriend or whatever it was. And then again, desires come. So the mind is still, our problem is not solved yet. And then the mind again will go back to enjoy. So then the other thing that Krishna says is abhyasa. The word abhyasa means practice. The word practice here, the meaning of practice is repetition. Actors are practicing a play. They do it over and over again, so it becomes well done. So when we want to learn any skill, we have to practice. And when there's practice, we gradually gain skill. So at first, if you want to learn a musical instrument, you know, you sit down. And it's a mess. Your hands don't do the right things. You have a teacher that says every day you must practice. And they give you a little book, exercise book. You have to. I had these violin lessons I used to take one time. And every day, da 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 da. That's practice, right? It's you do it, and then slowly, gradually, it gets better. Then the practices get a little harder, and then you do that. And if you gain some skill, if you stop practicing, it goes away. So you have to practice, and you have to keep in practice. So this is what you see. People who are working at a high level of skill, they stay in practice. Like musicians, some great concert pianists, they say that, they just go 2 days without playing, they can see the difference. So they're playing, 4, 5, 6 hours a day, just to keep their level of skill up. And athletes are the same way. Another high performance group. And also, for example, another group that needs to stay in practice a lot are surgeons, who do operations. If you need to have a surgical operation, find that surgeon who does them all the time. It's not a new thing. He does 15 a day every day. That's the person you want. Because the practice is there. And therefore the high level of skill. So this is practice. I found some places where Prabhupada talked about this word practice. Abhyasa, he says, in 1968 in San Francisco, Prabhupada said, practically everything depends on practice. And then he quotes Bhagavad Gita 8:8, Abhyasa yoga yuktena chetasa nanya gamina. Krishna says, by this Abhyasa yoga, this practice, repetitive practice, by which the mind nanya gamina does not go anywhere else. The mind, everywhere you see in the Bhagavad Gita, in one way or another, this idea, chetasa na anya gamina, keeping the mind fixed or keeping the mind steady or not allowing the mind to go anywhere else. If you do this, according to 8:8, you attain the Supreme Lord by this Abhyasa Yoga. Abhyasa Yoga means yoga practice. Practice it. So this whole Krishna consciousness movement is to practice transferring from one kind of consciousness to another. So we require practice. Just like, then he gives this example, one man can run a few miles. I cannot even run 1 mile, Prabhupada says. But he is practiced, the guy who can run several miles. We see some boys, they run on practice. Practice it. Strength of heart is increased by practice. He's talking about running. If I run, my heart will be palpitating, be beating really hard, because I have no practice. So by practice, everything can be attained. Then he says, Hari Rama, Rama Rama, Hari Hari. That's the practice, the chanting. And then again he says, and again, another place he quotes, you have to practice. Not all of a sudden these things will happen. You will attain Krishna consciousness. And again he quotes Abhyasa Yoga Yuktena. The same word. Krishna says Abhyasena in this verse, in the 6th chapter, the 8th chapter. A number of times you'll see this reference to Abhyasa Yoga. You have to practice. Your mind cannot go outside. You have to become the master of your mind. You cannot be dictated to by the mind. Then you are victim. Either you're the master of the mind or the victim of the mind. Then he says, this is in the book Renunciation Through Wisdom. When a person fixes his mind on the eternal, exquisite form of Shyamasundara, the blackish, beautiful Lord Krishna, all distress and anguish are vanquished. In the initial stages, the attempt to fix the mind on Krishna may be unsuccessful. But with regulated practice, Abhyasa Yoga, it becomes possible. Abhyasa Yoga means sincere engagement in the ninefold practice, process of bhakti, beginning with hearing and chanting the holy name, pastimes and so on of Lord Krishna. Proper execution of Abhyasa Yoga culminates in the awakening of divine consciousness or super consciousness. This is true success. Then there's another interesting discussion. Prabhupada's being interviewed. Actually, the conversation is about Socrates. But they go on to a larger discussion. So the interviewer says, so the proper use of the disciple, the proper use of intelligence is to guide everything in such a way that we become Krishna conscious. Prabhupada says, that's it. Without Krishna, consciousness remain on the mental platform. Being on the mental platform means hovering. That is to say, you can pursue this way, that way. You're not fixed. On that platform, we're not fixed. When he says hovering, he thinks of a bee, you know, just how bees sort of beat their wings and stay in one place, then they go this flower and this flower and this flower and this flower. So that's why Prabhupada always, he talks about the mental platform. Before there's intelligence, then the mind is uncontrolled. He says, it is the business of the mind to accept this and reject that. But when we are fixed in Krishna consciousness, we are no longer subjected to the mind's acceptance or rejection. Disciple, right conduct then becomes automatic. Prabhupada, yes, as soon as the mind wanders, we should immediately drag it back to concentrate on Krishna. While chanting, our mind sometimes wanders far away. We've had this experience, I'm sure, all of us. While chanting, our mind sometimes wanders far away, but when we become conscious of this, we should immediately bring the mind back to hear the sound vibration of Hare Krishna. That is called Yoga Abhyasa, the practice of yoga. We should not allow our mind to wander elsewhere. We should simply chant and hear the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, for that is the best yoga system. So particularly, this is where we need to practice control of the mind, and fixing the mind on Krishna, during the time we are dedicated to chanting the Hare Krishna mantra while chanting japa. And the Abhyasa Yoga means that when the mind wanders, you bring it back. When we do that, then we are chanting, we are on the Hare Krishna mantra on the clearing stage. There's three stages or platforms of chanting. One is called offensive, one is called clearing, and one is called pure. In the pure stage, the mind is fixed on Krishna. It just doesn't, is not interested in going anywhere, and it doesn't go anywhere. It's trained. And actually there's the thinking and the feeling and the willing are all just fixed on Krishna. No attraction to anything else. If you try to think of something else, it'll automatically go back to Krishna. That's the pure stage of chanting. Then there's no problem. But when we find that if we try to fix our mind on Krishna and it goes away, then that's because of offenses. In fact, that is offense. Remember the, of the offenses? One is called pramadaha. We say, and it is also an offense to be inattentive while chanting. This, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, this inattentiveness while chanting, he says, is really the pramadaha. That's the word, pramadaha, which literally means insanity. And it means not thinking of Krishna. Any distraction from Krishna is insanity. Maya is a kind of insanity. Actually, all offenses are one variety of others of pramada. Pramada, of not thinking of Krishna. In any case. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says this inattentiveness is the breeding ground, the seedbed of all the other offenses. And he says, if we are not trying to become free from inattentiveness, we will not be successful in becoming free from all the other offenses. Now, if we are committing offenses against the holy name, and we are not trying to become free from them, then our chanting is on the offensive platform. This is nam aparad. If we are on the offensive platform, we may chant and chant and chant, and nothing, well, much will happen. Nothing visible anyway. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that that in this case, the holy name is not much better than letters of the alphabet. It's full of all transcendental potencies, but that if the offenses are there, these potencies are not manifest. So if we are chanting and not trying to clear them up, we're not following the process, Prabhupada compares this to trying to cook with smoke. If you're cooking with smoke, it will take a long time to get your meal because you have your fire is not hot, and you'll be very inconvenienced. You'll cough and your eyes will tear up. You'll find a great deal of distress and not much will happen. Certainly, there's a little bit of fire there, but what good will it do you? It will take a long time. Therefore, we should have a hot fire. That means abhyasa yoga. There has to be practice. So at least, we cannot come immediately to the pure stage, but we can come immediately to the clearing stage. And that is that I have to chant while trying to give up offenses. I just have to be trying. And this clearing stage is actually indicated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Let me go back. So if what happened, let us take while we're doing japa. Now, I'm chanting my japa, and my mind is wandering here and there, and I'm getting so many good ideas, and thinking of this and that, and so on. Then this is offensive. That's offensive chanting. When, as Prabhupada said in this last statement I read, when I notice that my mind is wandering, oh, look what happened. I bring it back to again place my attention at the lotus feet of the holy name. And then my mind wanders again. Again I bring it back. My mind wanders again. I bring it back. That is the clearing stage. Just making that effort. That, in other words, at least I am not lazy. And I have some determination and some faith, then my mind wanders, I bring it back. Then if I just do like this, practice like this. And it's practice, you know. It's like sometimes sometimes you get very frustrated at the mind. You feel very upset that it's like this. Some days you don't feel like it, but you do it anyway. It's the nature of practice. Just like if you're trying to learn a musical instrument, your mother will say, "Did you practice today?" "I don't want to." "No, you have to practice." There has to be some intelligence that I have to do it anyway, whether I feel like it or not. And then when we do it, we bring the mind back. And in a gradual way, the mind will in this way gradually become conquered. It will again, more and more, it will stay, it will go away less and less. And actually what happens, according to Haridas Thakur, the Nam Acharya, is that when we chant in this way, on this clearing stage, what becomes manifest, the pure name is still not available to us, that's on the pure stage of chanting, the Shuddha Nam, but at least there's this Nam Abhasa, which he compares to the dawning twilight. It's when the sun is in the below the horizon, but the dawning light of the sun is in the sky. That's called Abhasa, the projection of light into darkness. So Haridas Thakur says that this Nam Abhasa destroys all sinful reactions and brings the devotee to the platform of mukti. It bestows liberation. The pure name, after liberation, the pure name gives prema. But just this Namabhasa, which is available simply by abhyasa yoga, by practice, this gives liberation. So while we are chanting on the clearing stage, the potencies of the holy name are manifest. The potencies in the form of this abhasa, and it is going to work. When you're chanting on the clearing stage, you can just imagine that sound vibration is going through your mind and destroying sinful desires. Little pockets of bad things are being destroyed. I even believe it's rewiring our nervous system. I think it works on the physical level too. Because the powers are activated by this abhyasa yoga. So the mind has to be concentrated in this way by this practice. Now, the other interesting thing is that this is really put by Mahaprabhu into the Shishastika prayers. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the eight pairs, the Shishastika prayers, he lines up the Shishastika prayers with the stages of advancement, beginning with Shraddha and going to Prema. Like the first prayer, which tells the blessings or the benedictions that come from chanting. This indicates the beginning stage of Shraddha, that one should have some faith that if I achieve the blessings of Sankirtan, then Chetodarpana Marjanam Bhava Mahadavagni Nirvapanam Shreya Kairava Chandraka Vitranam Vidyavadija. These things are happening. And then he says the second verse of the Shishastika indicates the clearing up of offenses while practicing Krishna consciousness, bhajana kriya, in the association of devotees. So three of those steps are combined into one. That it is anartha nivritti. But anartha nivritti states when I'm regularly practicing in the association of devotees. So he says in this prayer, Mahaprabhu begins by reflecting on the Lord's mercy. Nam namakari bahuda nija sarva shakti statarpita niyamitaha smarane nakalaha tava kripa bhagavan. You have many names, nam namakari bahuda, and in them you have placed your transcendental potencies. Nidya sarva shakti statarpita. You have so many names already, and then in all these names you have put your transcendental energies, and you've taught him how to chant them in such a way, niyamataha smarane nakalaha. And it is easy because there are not all these restrictions of time and place and so on. So this is the Lord's mercy. Tava kripa bhagava. This is your mercy, that you have done all this. Tava kripa bhagavan. Then he says, mam api durdaivam idrisham niha janina nuraga. However, I am unfortunate. I have durdaiva, misfortune. My misfortune is that in spite of all that, still I am not attracted. There's no attraction for chanting is in me. Now when Prabhupada translates this verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the last chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita, we see Mahaprabhu reciting and explaining the Shashastika prayers to Swarup Damodar and Ramananda Roy, his two most confidential associates. And when Prabhupada translates this one there, he says, Prabhupada says, Mahaprabhu, what he's saying is, my misfortune is that I commit offenses while chanting, and therefore no attraction to your names arises in me. So this durdaiva is that I am committing offenses. So the interesting thing in this book, in this verse, is just think of this verse as talking about two things. Tava kripa, your mercy, addressed to the Lord, and the devotee, mama durdaiva, my misfortune. These two things are there, the Lord's mercy and my misfortune. And so this is the feelings, the awareness that one has to have to chant on the clearing platform, to become free from anarthas. First of all, one is aware of one's durdaiva. It is said before this verse is given. Krishnadas Kaviraj says that when Mahaprabhu chanted this verse, he was overwhelmed with two emotions, Vishaya and Danya. Vishaya means lamentation. He was feeling sorry. And Danya, humility. He says when Mahaprabhu chanted this verse, he felt these things, lamentation and humility. And then he says, anyone who understands the purport of this verse, all dukkha and shoka, all suffering and sorrow will go away. So what is the purport of this verse? The purport of the verse is that, like Mahaprabhu, he realized, if I am chanting the holy name and my mind goes away, what is wrong with me? Here's the Lord. He's given his holy name. I'm sitting here chanting it. Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, so many acharyas, they have come to spread this holy name and give it to us. Here I am, I have this great fortune, I can chant it, I'm able to do it, I have so many misqualifications, still I can chant the holy name. Mahaprabhu's made it so easy for us to do it, and if I just chant his holy name, all these benedictions will come that are listed in the first verse, and still I'm not interested. What the hell is wrong with me? Why am I in this case? There should be Vishaya. I should understand that I'm fallen, that I'm very fallen. And actually, if we just try to concentrate our mind on the Lord, it'll come clear. The more we get, the first thing that the dawning rays of the holy name light up is the own garbage pile of our heart. We will see it anyway. So this is Mahaprabhu saying about himself, this is my misfortune. So if here the holy name is there and still I'm not interested, I must be chanting so many offenses. So I will feel very bad about myself. On the other hand, don't despair. Tava kripa, there's the mercy of the Lord, is there? I am chanting a holy name. So many devotees have worked to give me this mercy. There's no need to despair. I just have to take advantage of the Lord's holy name. Therefore, even though one should feel like Chaitanya, one should feel lamentation and humility, but at the same time, understanding that the Lord's mercy is there, then all you can do, understand why now, even in spite of whatever I have been and whatever I have done, nevertheless, here's the Lord's mercy. All I have to do is try to concentrate my mind on Krishna. All sinful reactions will go away. So here's the mercy of the Lord. So therefore, all dukkha, all shoka, all suffering and unhappiness, they disappear. That's the purport of this verse. And then from this realization, then the next step, that becomes a natural step. One actually starts to become humble. So we should practice in this way. This is how to control the mind. When we concentrate the mind on the Lord, in the beginning, it's a mechanical process. The mind wanders, we bring it back. The mind wanders, we bring it back. First of all, we keep from falling asleep. That's one way of being inattentive while chanting. Get enough rest the night before. If you're sitting down and you fall asleep, stand up. If you're still falling asleep, stand up, walk around. But anyway, stay awake. So don't be asleep. Don't be distracted. Let the mind come back. And then also there will be some feelings. Here, Mahaprabhu chanted with feelings. But the first feeling was lamentation. So one can realize one's own unworthiness, and at the same time appreciate the mercy of the Lord. Tava kripa mama durdaiva. These two things. So also we can chant with some feeling, following in the footsteps of Mahaprabhu in this way. So when there's feeling, then we're more engaged. Our mind is more. Thinking, feeling, willing, everything is there. So the Shishastika prayers should be our guide in this matter. Mahaprabhu has composed these eight prayers just for our guidance. And we should take advantage. If you haven't read these prayers in the last chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that is the thing to do. They're translated very nicely there. And Mahaprabhu, after he recites it in Sanskrit, he gives a Bengali also translation and commentary, and especially in the last, it's very long commentary. So. I recommend that. So this way, we can actually, it is not impossible to control the mind. Krishna said it, he said by abhyasa, and here's the appropriate abhyasa given to us by Srila Prabhupada. He went through so much difficulty, if you read his life story, what he went through to bring the holy name to us, so we should feel grateful, and we should pay him back by taking advantage of his mercy and cultivate the holy name. Okay, any questions or comments on this topic? Yes? Yes, some people do that. For myself anyway, I just say Krishna's name. He's come in the form of the holy name, and I find it easier to concentrate. I think sometimes some image of his form will come into my mind, but usually I just concentrate the name. And actually, if I need some visual thing, I think I see the name in writing, as though I'm reading the name. That's what I do. There's a natural sequence. When the chanting becomes more and more pure, then the name is revealed. Krishna's name is revealed. Now, Krishna's name is none different from Krishna. So first his name is actually revealed, the pure name. Until then we really don't know the meaning of the word Krishna, these two syllables, but then the name is revealed. And then the next sequence is Krishna's form is revealed, because the form is none different from the name. So naturally, Krishna's form. And then the next thing that is revealed is his qualities, his guna. And then the final thing that has come is Leela. So it actually happens in this sequence. Nama, Rupa, Guna, and Leela. So that will happen. And to me, there's no need to push it. So I'm dealing with, right now, Krishna's here when I'm chanting Japa. Then I'm dealing with his name. And I concentrate on the name. Even if I'm chanting in front of the deities, once in a while, I think of them looking at me rather than myself looking at them. That's my way I go about it. Anything else? Yes.
So it seems to be that we are focusing more on the mind because it's more like dynamic. The mind is like there's more movement,
mm-hmm.
whereas the intelligence is like kind of steady. It's, you know, it's like telling us certain things.
Yeah.
Is it this way?
Yeah, the mind is all around. That's we live in our mind, so to speak. And the intelligence is subtler, so we're hardly even aware of our intelligence. And the false ego, it's not that we think I'm our body, we just assume that nobody actually the mind is that part of material nature to which we are the closest. As Indian astrologers, if they want to see whether you're going to be happy or not, they look to the moon. Because the moon is the indicator of the mind. And happiness, material happiness or distress, depends on the mind. And you can have lots of money and all kinds of good fortune, but if the moon has got some bad features, you'll not be happy. So always, for your happiness or distress, they look to the mind. So that they see the mind is very important. In Western astrology, people want to know about their sun sign, but actually the moon is really the more important thing for your happiness. So that, yeah, just the mind is more apparent to us. It thinks, it feels, it wills. Intelligence is a little subtler, but it is actually intelligence which controls the whole mindset, the whole focus of our attention, whether it's focused on sense, to see the whole world in terms of sense gratification, or to see the whole world in terms of self-realization. That change is a change on the buddhi that governs that change.
Mm-hmm. In the book from Mahanidhi Swami, this Art of Chanting, they say it's like two circles. One circle is fixing on this mantra sound of the holy name.
Mm-hmm.
Prabhupada said we should just hear the holy name, mm-hmm, in the ear, and then you are fixing your mind. But mm-hmm, sometimes it's very difficult even to do this. Then this is just like the first circle, and then they have a second circle is remembering during chanting some instances which is connected with Krishna.
Yeah, I don't believe that.
You don't believe?
No. No.
So like Prabhupada Swami, he gives like a description of Krishna from top to the bottom, like description.
Yeah, there's ways of meditating on Krishna.
Yeah.
I have a lot of respect for Mahanidhi. But he has a habit which I don't like, and that he goes around Vrindavan and he hears from this person, he hears from that person, he hears from this person, that he doesn't inquire too much who they are, and he puts it all together. So for that reason, I cannot accept his books as authoritative, because he goes to Radha Kund and he hears from this Babaji, and he goes to Govardhan, he hears from this Babaji, and he likes it, he puts it all together. So I unfortunately just cannot take that as authoritative. There are many different practices. And so I tend to do what Prabhupada says.
Yeah, I once made the experience that I was in Vrindavan and I chanted Hare Krishna, and then I was supposed to give the lecture there, so I was a little nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was, while chanting, I fixed my mind on some Bhagavad Gita verses.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the soul is eternal, and you know, all these,
mm-hmm,
verses. And then suddenly I had some glimpse of moments when the mind was really controlled, because I was fixing on the Bhagavad Gita while chanting,
mm-hmm,
at the same time,
mm-hmm,
thinking about the soul, how the energy is going through the,
mm-hmm,
body, you're eternal,
mm-hmm,
living in this body,
mm-hmm,
like this, and a whole, like on a row of meditating about the Bhagavad Gita process, and I had some little experience that the mind was really under control. So for some moments I had really, you know,
mm-hmm,
some peaceful situation of the mind,
mm-hmm,
being controlled.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like this. I know
maybe that I've also had experiences like that, but my conclusion is that, first of all, we're supposed to be chanting all the time. Kirtaniya Sadahari means all the time. So my actual state of mind should be that I'm always chanting. Even when I'm reading Bhagavad Gita, even when I'm doing anything else, I should be chanting. So actually, when I'm reading Bhagavad Gita, I should be reading like that. But I also think that while I'm chanting the Hare Krishna mantra on japa, I should concentrate on that. And the more strength I can give to this, because they're different activities, hearing, chanting, remembering. And in an advanced state, you know, that's something else again. But the tendency sometimes in advanced stage, then you can't tell one from the other. You say the Hare Krishna mantra. Oh, it's even in Bhaktivinoda Thakur. In Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says, we're going late and we have a meeting that starts, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in the Bhajana Rahasya, he points out in the beginning that the Hare Krishna mantra consists of eight pairs of names. And he says that each pair of names indicates one of the verses of the Shishastika prayers. And then, of course, the book Bhajana Rahasya then gives other verses about each of the Shishastika prayers. So that's the first thing. Then at the end of each of the eight chapters, there's one verse indicating, in sequence, Krishna's Astakalya Lila, eight, 3 hour, the day is divided into 8 3-hour segments in sequence. So by this he indicates, what I actually did was, since he says in the beginning each verse of the Shishastika is indicated or pointed to by each pair of names, this is what I did. I think that the Shishastika prayers is the mental atmosphere in which we should chant the holy names. So I learned the Shishastika prayers so well that just by saying the number 3, the whole verse comes to my mind. I learned it in Sanskrit, learned what all the words meant. You know, it took a little while, but I spent some time really learning the Shishastika prayers. So when I say Hare Krishna, I can think of the first. Instantly, the whole Shishastika prayers fly. Hare Krishna, the second one. Krishna, Krishna, third one. Hare, and so on. Right? So in that sense, you know, I took this hint. And because he puts the Astakalya Ligala, I think that at an advanced stage, actually when one chants the Hare Krishna mantra, one will go through the whole Krishna's Astakalya Ligala. This is a very advanced stage. And I think what we need to be careful of is the sahajiya tendency that to try at an early stage imitate what is natural in an advanced stage. So my recommendation, if we need something, some other mental atmosphere, the Shishastika prayers is the one that's provided, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur starts us out with. And then gradually everything else will be there. So, but in the beginning, we have different active hearing, chanting, remembering. So when we are worshipping the deity, for example, on the altar, we should focus on the deity worship. When we're cooking in the kitchen, we should pay attention to our cooking. When we're chanting the holy names, we should pay attention to the holy name. When we're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, we should really pay attention on Srimad Bhagavatam. Give our full attention to what we are doing. Don't try to do two things at once. Gradually, the fact is, ultimately, they're all different ways of meditating on Krishna, and ultimately, while we're doing everything, like for example, if I'm driving my car, I should not chant japa while I'm driving my car, because I will not. That will be inattentiveness while chanting. But because japa is this dedicated time to the holy name. Nevertheless, while I'm driving my car, I should chant the Hare Krishna mantra, because I should be always chanting the holy name. Right? So that's japa to me is like a little difference. Anyway, this is my understanding of it, my approach to it. There may be other approaches, but that's the one I'm taking for whatever it's worth. It's late now, we have to stop because
one question.
We're going to get in trouble, okay.
So maybe it's a language problem for me, misunderstanding. I have one question. So it is Krishna, my understanding is it is Krishna's mercy to can chat on the Namabasa platform. And why it's so complicated to stay there on this platform. So Krishna bring to stay here. This, I think this is really...
What does p mean?
It's tough. Yeah, it's not easy.
Well, the example is that if you're drowning in an ocean, Krishna sends the rope to pull you out, but still we have to hold on. Right? Okay. So what does that holding on mean? It means that we show Krishna that we are really interested. Because Prabhupada says, how much should we want Krishna? Prabhupada describes chanting like a child crying for its mother. So like that. When a child is really desperate and really wants his mother. So we have to show Krishna that we're actually interested. This thing where I say, Krishna, yeah, I want pure devotional service, but later. Not now. Well, I want some pure devotional service and I want Maya at the same time. You know, then it's difficult. So Krishna just wants that's the one thing that we have to do. And then if we're at least serious in our desire, I may have so many desires for sense gratification, I have so many distractions. But if I'm serious in asking Krishna, please remove these things, then he makes it easier for us gradually to become more and more attached to him. For we may have material desires, we may have distractions, we may have inattentiveness, but as long as we're not trying to maintain them, which is the 10th offense against the holy name, that we want them to go away, we sincerely want to be free from them, then if that at least sincere desire is there, then Krishna, he actually climbs down the rope and gives us a hand. He'll do a little more. He'll strengthen our determination from within. But we have to want it, that's all. Okay. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. Is it okay? You want to just answer all right?
Yeah. So, yes, I understand that.
Okay.
But it is so tough work to chant like a
yeah, it is.
Child cries.
We just, by practice it comes, you know? I think it becomes natural.
That is a really good... Now I have much more hope.
No, here's the thing, you know. If you love somebody, you'll pay attention.
Mm.
Right? Attentiveness, if there's love, naturally there's attentiveness. But when we say practice, that also depends on it working the other way around. That if you pay attention, you'll begin to love.
Mm.
Because within attention are the seeds of love. Especially when that attention is there for Krishna. So we just pay attention and work to pay attention, even though that's mechanical, gradually some feelings will come for Krishna. Because those feelings are already there.
I feel so much help from Krishna.
and he showed me so.
Yeah.
But see, in my way, I chant.
Yeah.
I have to. I don't know.
I don't want to.
No, it's nothing.
My hope is that when I have all this seva things behind.
Yeah, right.